Okay.
And we start the podcast.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing? You good?
I know you like that. I know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
I see the girls in the club, they getting wild for me. And all the pretty chicks all wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this style for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me. And when this beat drop, I know they gon' lean.
Hello, you have made it to another episode of Dome and Bedlam, the official Lookout Landing podcast. I am Nathan Bishop, the managing editor of Lookout Landing, joined by former editor of Lookout Landing, Scott Weber. Scott, how are you?
Doing excellent. How are you? That's the real question.
I am fine. I'm also joined by David. What the hell do I call you? Like, odd job?
Odd job. Yeah.
Very good with a shoe. No, hat. But it's a hat.
Yeah, and he's banned from 007 in 1997 because he's too short and you have to hit the right bumper to aim down. It's not fair.
You, like Oddjob, have no neck.
Actually, you can call me Golden Gun.
Okay.
One-shot kill.
But the one in GoldenEye.
Exactly.
We're also really fortunate. We are joined by another former managing editor of Lookout Landing, friend of the site, Jeff Sullivan. Jeff, thank you for being here. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. I guess, I don't know, would that make me Jaws?
Does it make you Jaws? You tell us.
Out of.
I don't know. I don't really have a whole lot of GoldenEye material. I wasn't prepared. So I guess we can talk about Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball 97. Is that what it was? Where you could have the Chica and then you could Griffey would go up and hit a home run every bat?
Yes. You know, I actually asked Griffey which one of his games was his favorite one. And he told me it was, I think, that one. Is that the second one?
Winning Run was the second one. Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball was the first one, I believe.
Okay. Well, that works for me. Jeff, it's good to have you. If one failed Mariner prospect could describe your current attitude towards being on with us, which one would that be?
Well, I guess it would be Ryan Anderson, because right now all I'm thinking about is leaving and making dinner.
That's fair. Is he still a chef?
I don't know. There's no way for me to know. I think you always keep track of the first step post-career of like someone who just missed, but I don't think from there you get to keep track of the second and the third steps, because at that point it's just like former chef becomes something else, and that's not an article.
Failed chef.
Vinny Catricola could be a berry farmer right now after becoming a cop, and we'd never know.
You know, if Vinny Catricola were like a cranberry farmer, I'd be legitimately interested, because that... Oh, I can't swear on this podcast. That
yes,
is an interesting... I can swear. That shit is weird. I don't quite... How do they grow? Do they just grow on like a bush and then you flood the bog? Or this isn't very descriptive, but I was just in Massachusetts and I saw a bunch of cranberries.
I believe you dig a hole.
You dig... Okay. Walk me through this.
David, you're a farmer. Go. Cranberries, how do they work?
If I'm not mistaken, that you grow them on the bush, then you take the berries off of the bush, and they go into the water as berries, no longer on the plant.
Why are they in water?
I think it's soaking the acidity out of the skin.
Huh. Okay.
Sort of like the process for turning olives into something palatable. You brine them, but you don't need to brine cranberries. Just soak them, I believe.
Have you tried?
No.
Okay. All right. That's all fine.
I don't really love cranberries.
I feel like if you get to the circling back around to our thing with the former athletes doing things, I feel like you don't want to hear what they're doing after their first thing, because if you do, it's usually bad. Like, I don't know if you were at all connected to the Sonics in any way, shape, or form, but like former center Robert Swift has been popping in the news recently because he's basically a drug addict who like holds himself up in his mansion with a bunch of guns. And so that's like the kind of thing that you end up hearing about athletes like 2 or 3 degrees removed from their profession.
That's the second step. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's fine.
But at least he was safe.
No one could get him.
No one could get him. He had squatter's rights. It's a real...
Except for the repo, man.
Okay, yeah. So I didn't prepare any GoldenEye material, but I do actually have 19 questions about bogs. So if we're
perfect.
Going... what kind of conditions are... You're not going to make me ask bog questions, right? Okay, I don't actually have bog material. I'm sorry, you guys.
It's okay. No. So that was a false lead. I had like bog knowledge halfway typed into my...
Actually, this is... This is the notebook sitting next to my computer. Most things are crossed out. One says Eovaldi FC. I don't know what that is. I got first pitch question mark. That's vague. It's just a baseball term.
Okay. Yeah.
And I have the number 85 written next to John Lester's name, but I have absolutely no idea what that was referring to. But I wrote this note last week, so maybe this is like a senior moment.
John, you are getting up there. I guess we could start to drift towards the Mariners. You once covered the team in depth. Like, you know, you cover nationally. Like, I would actually really like to know your perspective, having been a team-focused blogger and now going into more of a national writer perspective of, because, you know, we kind of, one of the old things in blogging was that we would say, well, these national writers, they can't possibly know everything about the team. That's pretty accurate, right? Like, you're not actually able to follow every team super closely.
Oh, no. Like, I just wrote about this new Ranger. They picked up a guy named Dario Alvarez from the Braves. And, I mean, no one's ever heard of him. That's fine. But I was looking at it and then thinking, okay, well, how does this fit in with the Rangers bullpen? Because when I think of the Rangers bullpen, I think of, like, 15 different pitchers who just kind of show up. And I have no idea really what, like, the structure of their bullpen is. I have to go in and research that. And so it takes a little bit of time, but that's the kind of stuff where if you're a fan of the team, you know exactly who your reliable five relievers are. You know who the two are on the bubble. You care about them. You know who the sleepers are. You know who, like, the next Carson Smith is or whatever coming up through the system. And that kind of, like, peripheral stuff doesn't really come across the radar too often unless you look it up. But thankfully, or not thankfully, I found that I'm prone to exhaustive and excessive research whenever I'm writing about something. So I end up learning a lot, but it always takes time because it's like Wilson Contreras called up at the Cubs, big prospect catcher, left fielder, because that's apparently a position that they have exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Schwarber.
I didn't. Yeah. And he was like a top prospect, one of the top catching prospects in baseball. And I just didn't really know much about him and I didn't really care much about him. But for Cubs fans, it's like a big fucking deal that he comes up and he hits a home run, I think, on his first pitch in the major leagues. And people are always like, oh, how much do you think Contreras is going to play? Or do you think he's going to? I don't know. I don't care. And I don't know.
In that exact order. I don't care. I have no intention of finding out. For the record, from my understanding, all of the Rangers is 15 Tanner Shepherds. Is that correct? Is that their bullpen?
I'm pretty sure. And all of them are on the 60-day DL because I don't think Tanner Shepherds has pitched this year, but I keep thinking of him also. And I think as a smug Mariners moment, I think they thought Matt Bush was going to be their Edwin Diaz, but nope. Edwin Diaz is better.
He really is. That's a fun transition. How, I mean,
yeah,
I don't really know how, I don't know how you felt about his conversion. Did you know that he was a starter? Actually, we could circle back around to that. Did you know that he was a starter at the beginning of the year? Were you able to pay close enough attention for that?
I was familiar with him, but only in the sense where it was like, oh, the Mariners have a terrible farm system and this is the best they have to show for it.
Right.
So I kind of like, I only knew about him. Right. Like if he were in any other system, no, I wouldn't have known about him. But because it was the Mariners, you think, well, he's the best of a shitty bunch. So
well,
then
he's been
you're
around
there.
For like he's been around for like a while too. He's still very young, but it seems like we've been. I mean, I wrote about him 3 years ago. I'm sure you wrote about him a few times too. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, I think he dates back to like Luis Gohara prospect days or something. Oh, that bummed me out just saying that out loud. But yeah, no, I was aware of the conversion, and with any of those things you say, well, but a starter is more valuable than a reliever, and then he does this and you think it's fine though.
Yeah, exactly. Turns out if you're the very best at what you're doing, even if that's less valuable than the idealized version of what you would have been in another role, it really works. I was trying to figure out just how good he is, because we live in what some might say is the golden age of the reliever with Aroldis Chapman and pretty much all the Yankees bullpen and a couple other guys scattered around as these freaks that dominate people. And it kind of feels like Diaz has like kind of come out of nowhere. And I don't know, like how the fuck do you strike out 44 guys in 21 and 2/3 innings, you know? Yeah. That's not even, even in the increased strikeout world that we live in now, that doesn't even feel real. I don't expect it to continue this way. There's no reason to expect it to continue like this, right? Like that. I mean, how, in your perspective, looking at it nationally, how good do you think he actually is as far as just like the best relievers in baseball?
Yeah, it's hard when you talk about like a starting pitcher, you think, okay, opponents are going to adjust to him and then the early results are going to go down, whatever. So a starter who comes up and strikes out a bunch of guys early, you think, okay, the league will adjust, they'll figure him out. But with the relievers like this, You sort of have to wonder how much adjusting is there really. Players don't get so many reps where they worry about these guys, and you see Diaz once, he's throwing 99 fucking miles per hour with a slider that is legitimately good. And there are so many other blueprints of these guys being so dominant. I mean, Andrew Miller, of course, is sort of the gold standard now, where he's just fastball slider. He's like slider three-fifths of the time, and he's perfect. And hitters aren't adjusting to him because you just can't. There's something about the way that Miller works where hitters go up and they're like, well, I'll see what I can do. And then by the time that inner monologue is over, he's got three strikes and they go back. And so I think with Diaz, like, so I just wrote about Dario Alvarez. Have any of you ever heard of Dario Alvarez?
I mean, is that one of the guys in The Princess Bride? It's not.
Well, no, you remember MTV's Daria?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, the one with the glasses. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, him. Yeah. So that's his wife. But Dario Alvarez just got traded from the
I feel like that was more of a sister.
Dario Alvarez is some guy who just got traded from the Braves to the Rangers. In what you might know is the Lucas Harrell blockbuster that just went down today.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
huge.
There was another piece. Dario Alvarez is some nobody who was on the Braves. They claimed him off waivers, and in 15 innings, so a smaller sample than Diaz, in 15 innings he had 28 strikeouts. He actually has, if you set an embarrassingly low minimum, he has the highest strikeout rate in baseball at 46%. And then it's Andrew Miller, I think, or maybe Dylan Betances, the same fucking guy, in second place at like 45%, and then Edwin Diaz is right there at like 44-45%. So you have, or like Tony Zick last year, right? He struck out like 40% of guys, which was absurd, but then in his small, and where's Evan Scribner? We'll talk about that later. So
they're all gone.
Giving up home runs in his mind, Jeff.
These aren't even nightmares. This is just how I dream. I think there is this level of relievers that exists now where they really are sort of like 35-45% strikeout guys. You've got like Carter Capps, where it's easy to see him when he's healthy being like, oh, of course nobody can hit him. Look at him. Look at what he does. He jumps at you like a fucking bear. But you have with Diaz, because of the small sample, I think you figure, okay, maybe he's more like a 30% strikeout guy, but he's so difficult to hit in the zone. I just don't know how you get better against that, because he's not the only guy doing it. So other hitters who have already seen him have experience against like 97-102 miles per hour, and it doesn't seem to matter. So I would figure that the only thing that'll get Diaz is that if he either loses his velocity or if his arm breaks. But I think with
come on now,
look it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It happens to all of them, or they just become Steve Cishek. But with
is it die as a hero or live long enough to become Steve Cishek?
I wanted to follow up and kind of like go along with what you're talking about there. Do you feel like, I think that what we're talking about is we're getting close to the red line of what human ability is able to react to, like the stuff margin, where the stuff is so good that there isn't really an adjustment that the human eye and hands can really do. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah. Yeah, and
like Aroldis Chapman's throwing 105. What the fuck are you gonna?
Yeah, I don't even know what that means from 60 feet. Well,
so like Sam Miller, you know Sam Miller, Baseball Prospectus.
Heard of him?
You're familiar with the name?
Yes.
He tweeted either yesterday or the day before something that stuck in my mind, where he was like, it's amazing how good Aroldis Chapman is, but it's amazing how good he isn't. And I liked his phrasing of that, because it's you watch Chapman pitch and you think, well, his ERA is obviously zero. Like, there's no
sure.
How are there batters who reach base? How he's obviously like he's no better than Kenley Jansen or Andrew Miller or Betances, and of course all these guys are freaks. But he's throwing stuff that no one else has ever thrown, and I don't know if anyone else ever will throw it. But he still can be hit, which is interesting. You've got who is like Brad Ziegler throws, I think, 46 miles per hour, and his numbers for the last several years have been amazing. Not like Chapman amazing, but he just doesn't get hit.
No one.
I mean, he gets
hit,
but he doesn't
get
hard.
No one hits him.
It's phenomenally boring kind of baseball, but it works. And he's like 20 miles per hour slower than Chapman. So I think there definitely is a threshold And Chapman is probably near it. And if there was a whole slate of guys who were throwing 105 miles per hour, then you would probably have to do something. But hitters don't seem to have had a huge problem reacting to the top velocity, or at least not as huge a problem as you might expect. Like Bruce Rondon hasn't gotten a ton of strikeouts. Who's the guy on the Braves? Mauricio Cabrera. I haven't looked up his numbers, but I'm just going to assume because he's a Brave, he doesn't get a ton of strikeouts either. And he throws like 102 miles
who's
per
the
hour.
Guy gonna... on, who's the guy on the Pirates whose name sounds like the combination of like a Transformer and a Pokemon that pitched yesterday? He throws like 102 and he's running a K rate of like 7.9 or something like that.
Is that
Archimedes something?
Caminero.
Thank you.
Yep. Yep.
That's the one.
It's like the guy I always think of is, what's the guy's name? Nathan Eovaldi?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like he throws gas and his strikeout rate is like very meager and modest.
Yeah.
So it's not just velocity, clearly.
Right. Like Caminero right now, he's at 7 strikeouts per 9 innings. Mauricio Cabrera, who is like Chapman level velocity, he's small sample, but he's only struck out 9 guys in 13 innings. So that top velocity clearly can be adjusted to. I think the frightening thing with Chapman is he's got that slider that these other pitchers just don't have anything reliable yet to go with that pitch, because that's where it gets really stupid, where you can have, like when Edwin Diaz came up, you think, oh, he throws 100. Great. Oh, he learned a slider. Now this isn't fair.
Yeah.
Because then the thing about the top velocity is you have to make a decision so early. And when you make the decision early, you can make that decision if you know a fastball is coming. But as soon as there's something else, you're just wiped out.
Yeah.
Well, and that's something I almost wonder about the top velocity guys is it maybe, Nathan, you were talking about exceeding or reaching the human potential of hitting this speed, but is throwing that speed maybe reaching the human potential of the pitching mechanic, where it's like you really have to sacrifice command in order to throw that? I mean, that 105.7 or whatever ball from Chapman, I mean, it was 2 strike zones away from being in the zone. So while it's relevant, it's still like that's not going over the plate.
But he has thrown that pitch for a strike before, right?
Yeah, I think he got Tony Gwynn Jr. in like 6 years ago.
Yeah, that was when he first did it. It's weird, too, that there's been like that kind of gap. And it's actually probably kind of amazing that he had a 6-year gap between 105 mile an hour pitches, because it was like he did it and it was this amazing thing. And then there was this big gap. But let's transition that into, while we're talking about velocity, into a shared interest that we all have, which is James Paxton. You and I have kind of talked, not on this podcast, about James Paxton a little bit. We've seen a little bit more. The sample size is built a little bit. What's your analysis of James at this point? Like where does he stand in your eyes as far as a pitcher? He's shown that the velocity is not a fluke. That's a real thing that he's decided that he does now. So what is his ability? Like how good can he be now with this new James Paxton that we're seeing?
God, I love him so much.
Me too.
What's so exciting is like the velocity is there. It's easy enough to explain. He made the mechanical adjustment and like he still is throwing his strikes. Like he's still at, I'm looking at it now. So previously he was been around 60 to 61% strikes. And this year over however many starts he's made, he's at 66%. And that is a huge leap as this goes, and that's been pretty steady since he came back to the majors. So that is really exciting. What I think it's had the unfortunate side effect of is then you think, then you realize, oh, he's still not a finished product, because you realize how close he is to being like, oh my God, James Paxton. And then it's kind of annoying that he hasn't made like the third breakthrough, which is a really consistent secondary pitch that he's, you know, he's messed around with his curveball. He had a changeup. He's, what is he working on now? The cutter.
He's throwing the cutter a lot, like 20% or something this year.
Yeah. Yeah. The cutter has really emerged. And he doesn't really have, to this point, I think, a really good out of zone chase pitch, which you'd love to see paired with the fastball. But because of his fastball and the strike throwing ability, I mean, at the end of the day, you look at him right now, and he's been still sort of underwhelming in the majors this year, but he's got 4 times as many strikeouts as walks. He's throwing strikes. He throws hard. He seems to be throwing comfortably. I think relative to where James Paxton was before, or like this spring when they didn't even want to like give him a jersey with his name on it, I think It's important to maintain enough perspective and realize, oh, he's a legitimate major league starting pitcher right now. Even if he's still not the ace you think he could be with his stuff, he's taken two massive leaps forward.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was like number 98 in Phoenix. I saw him. He was giving up home runs left and right. He looked awful. So I don't know how that happens, but it was really great. So it's mostly the reduced arm slot. Are we all on the same page there? I still am totally not on the – I'm not 100% on how that actually happened. It just seems like he.
It looks a little less noisy. His mechanic.
Yeah, I'm not 100% clear there. Scott, do you?
I'm not.
Go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Oh, Scott, go.
Scott, no, say something. Scott,
God damn it, Scott.
Yes, I hear. It me. No, Paxton's an interesting guy for me because I have fallen on my sword a few times throughout my writing career, which is non-existent for the past year plus, but I always kind of thought that Paxton would be a reliever just because of the health or the health and how intensely awesome that stuff would play up in the bullpen. But it's kind of been amazing, and with the velocity change and now the control, and now he's demonstrated some actual health for a little bit, like the ceiling is, it's massive. Like I think 3 or 4 years ago when we looked at that and we said, oh, a left-handed pitcher with that kind of velocity, if he can develop secondary stuff that is beastly, which he still hasn't done, and now he's a legit number three in just about anybody's rotation, it's amazing. I you got to keep him in his current role and see what happens.
Absolutely.
I think it used to be easy to look at him and be like, oh, he could maybe become later career Eric Bedard, but now I think you can look at him and think, oh, he could become earlier. And so there's how many times can you fall on a sword,
Scott?
It depends where it hits you.
So very many.
Scott's very thin. So like so it, it's many. Easy for I it to kind of be a glancing blow.
Slender fellow.
They're just sort of they're flesh wounds.
Yeah.
Jeff, I think the mic dropped when you made that comparison, by the way. So I want to make sure that we get that, unless that was just me that didn't get it.
Latter career Eric Bedard, I believe. I mean, early career Eric Bedard. Is that what you said, Jeff? I'll edit it. Sounds better.
Yeah, all versions of Eric Bedard.
Okay.
Paxton
James
has
Paxton
all
contains
Bedards.
Multitudes.
And all the Bedards.
He does. He's also one
across the multiverse.
He's also one goofy, awkward son of a bitch, to be very clear. And that's part of why I love him. He's just the best.
Very nice guy. We actually had James on the podcast. Well, I had James on the podcast a couple years ago, and he was a very nice and surprisingly funny person.
He's probably figuring he better be if he's pitching career.
You better be funny.
Jeff, I want to we're not going to keep you too much longer because I know that you've got dinner to make and other important things, I'm sure. But I wanted to ask you, as we're getting close to the trading deadline here, we've kind of talked a little bit about the idea of what the Mariners can and can't do at the trading deadline. I've advocated for the team essentially to just stand pat more or less, unless they want to do something super sexy like swap Joaquin Benoit and Drew Storen.
That was hot.
Because
that
I don't see the team. They don't have anything to trade really, and unless they're going to blow up the team, and I don't think they're bad enough that they can potentially justify blowing up this roster, especially for a fan base that hasn't had any success in 15 years, as you may be familiar with.
they have succeeded in. Hold on. This is going to come to me.
Uh-oh.
No, you're right.
It's
no,
John,
they haven't.
It's John Lester 85.
Oh, that actually says... So, Jeff, you when did you start looking at Lanning? Was it 2003? Leone for third?
John Lester was born in 1984, so that's not what that was. started writing on a site in November 2003, right around I think when that Carlos Guillen trade was.
Oh wow,
the first.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the post tuberculosis, but pre coming back to the Mariners. So it was right around when like the Omar Vizquel trade fell through because they thought he failed the physical, and then he played another 10 years, which is funny.
I don't want to focus on the positives because there weren't really very many on all the time that you wrote about the team. So I'm just curious, is there one Mariner team that stands out where you were just like, holy mother of God, I fucking hate everything about this team so much? Was there one specific year that just stands out as like, I do not want to watch these guys play another game of baseball?
Yeah, I think it was the 2007 through the 2012 Seattle Mariners. They were all, I guess they weren't all uniquely horrible, but Okay, so 2004, that was my first full season, but it was new and it was exciting to like have a team to write about and a thing to do. And it was like each row was record-breaking year, so that was kind of exciting. And 2005 was like, well, I guess this is still not my college homework, so it's Brett Boone or something still. Yeah, and Beltran, Richie Saxon. 2007 was obviously frustrating for the Lollapalooza aspect of it.
Yes.
And the Rick White and John Parrish aspect.
Yep. Been through wars.
Yeah,
remember it well.
you know who's in really great shape? Veterans of wars. Like if there's one group of people who don't need the state's assistance at all, it is definitely what doesn't kill you makes you stronger mentally, but physically it makes you much, much worse. 2008 and 2010 were sort of, I think they tried to be carbon copies of one another in that, you know, they make the sexy moves and you think World Series, yeah, and then it's like first draft pick. But I think 2010 was the actual worst. I think 2008 was the silliest worst.
Yeah.
Where like it was easy to laugh about it because it's like, oh, stupid front office. Of course it blew up. 2010 was like, oh, it didn't work. This one didn't work.
We thought we had a thing.
Well, that was post-hype, too, because that was the first time that the media had actually been like, oh, this is going to happen for Seattle.
And
finally,
that was the first time that the bloggers and the internet community kind of got behind it, too.
Accepted it, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you remember Matthew Carruth, and he gave me some time ago, sitting above my desk right now, there's a framed ESPN the magazine cover. It's a baseball preview 2010. Outs are in, and so are the Mariners.
Is it Ichiro eating the popcorn?
Ichiro holding the popcorn and seemingly not eating it. And if I look closely, actually, the ground is littered with popcorn. So I don't know exactly what he's been doing with the popcorn, but it doesn't look like he's been eating it at all.
That actually is my biggest issue with that shot, is the way Ichiro's eating popcorn. He has a single kernel in his finger, and he's just sort of like blowing a whistle.
And if you look at it behind the letters ESPN, there's like popcorn in the air. So he's been flicking it or throwing it. Like,
wouldn't that make sense though, from what we know of Ichiro, when like he's not playing a game, the AL speeches and all that stuff, like he'd just be sitting there dicking around chucking popcorn at Felix and is it Cliff Lee, the other guy in the shot?
So Felix has a handful of popcorn, he's actively eating it, his mouth is full, but that might just be chewing tobacco. Cliff Lee is sitting there being like, I'm not going to be on this team very long, and Ichiro, the bag of popcorn is like, it's full, but there's popcorn everywhere, so there must have been I don't know how I didn't end up with a post analyzing this magazine cover, but if I ever guest post, this is going to be what it's going to be.
I mean,
the invitation is officially extended.
Well, it's sure shit not going to be a game recap.
Well, what about this one? Mariners were behind 3-1 in the seventh in Pittsburgh. I'm sure that I would be happy to step aside for you. After you make dinner, it'll come.
I've watched it'll just come, as much of it as you have.
That's exactly. Probably watched as much of it as Matt has. Spoiler alert. Yeah, so I would feel bad. I got one more for you, and actually it just left my mind, so I'm not sure.
Was it Leonard about trade deadline stuff?
No, it was something depressing. It was not, had nothing to, I remember what it was. I didn't want to end on a positive, because that would be counter to the entire experience.
That would be off brand. If anything is off brand,
if there's anything that LHL has stood for, it's sadness.
Don't you dare change that logo.
Jeff, I would love to know your actual opinion, because I don't care either way, and so many people want to know. If I can ask you one question,
that was
your actual opinion on the current state and the legacy of the Lookout Landing logo.
You can't change it.
Okay.
I think I remember when it was I don't remember what the initial logos were, but somebody like from the community made the initial Richie Saxon logo, which I liked, and then they worked up the legally not Richie Saxon version of the logo, which I don't know. I guess Richie Saxon is probably drunk and litigious, so you never know when he's gonna reach out and try to get his $51 million.
Yeah.
But I think that, to speak honestly, it is important to keep in mind the spirit of the logo, which is that things are horrible and things will remain horrible. And when things are not horrible, it's important to remember that things will become horrible, so that you might appreciate when the roiling sea of horrors has allowed you to ride the wave.
I that, I think that pretty much works. I'm going to ask you one last question and then we'll let you go. And I am, before I do that, I will say that I'm super grateful for you coming on, and that, I'm just super grateful, if we're going to be honest about stuff, for LL, what it's meant to so many people, yeah. The legacy of it. Scott and I have both done that, and we have not done it in the same way that you did it, and you really did something great. And like, to hand off something that it basically feel like the role is just, this is amazing and I don't want to fuck it up. It's pretty much all because of you, man. So we're really grateful for that. But
and hopefully we didn't fuck it up. I mean,
well, I can tell you this much. You guys were able to pull off the maneuver I never took the time or something to do, which was hiring other people, which would have been a smart move back then. Maybe if I wasn't so in want of more control or autonomy, I guess, over the site. Would have been smart to have more than like two writers on it at a time. In retrospect, could have saved a lot on those therapy bills.
There's been about 50 people that have come and gone over the last 3 years, though.
They all show up.
I'm not saying they've all been good.
Specifically, some on this podcast.
Yes. Hey guys,
perhaps.
How's it going?
Joe P. Skeevy.
Jeff, let's end on a depressing note. What's your opinion on where Felix is and what his future holds?
Oh God. So I think the bummer of it is during his peak, which, you know, was a decade, I spent the whole time looking for signs of decline. Like, oh, maybe is he hurt? His velocity's down. Is he hurt? Is that a sign that he's hurt? When he hurt his elbow in 2007 or whatever, 2006, it's like, oh, he is hurt.
Yeah.
This is the end of the world.
Right after one hitter.
Oh my God. And the A's game. Oh, the A's game might have been his best, well, second best game he ever threw. Anyway, spent so much time sort of bracing myself for when it would get worse that now it's worse. And I think, oh, but I miss being apprehensive about nothing as opposed to worried about reality. I think if you want sort of some solace, I guess I don't have this saved in my history, but you know, Justin Verlander is an example of a guy who sort of fell off and got bad, and then he's like, no, I don't want to do that anymore, and then he got kind of good again, which is a step I think a lot of people figured he wasn't going to take. You sort of want to follow the narrative arc of, oh, player is great, and then he is not. But players do bounce back. God knows Felix has the movement still. He has the know-how. He's not seen him succeed at 90 miles per hour before.
Right.
But he very clearly is not where he would like to be. And it's weird to be in the position of hoping that a guy like this can make the next adjustment. But he's already made so many adjustments that, you know, just succeeding and losing 7 miles per hour at the same time is pretty remarkable. So I haven't given up, but I know Meg just wrote, or didn't just write, just tweeted back to something she wrote in June that I think went up at Baseball Prospectus, and I think it echoes all of her feelings, thinking, well, we're no longer confident, so we're just kind of hoping. But I keep flashing back to the John Lackey clause in his contract and thinking, yeah, you know, that's there for a reason. Yeah. That's not an accident.
Yeah, it's just sad as shit. It all sucks because that was the one thing, and it's just such a bummer. You guys have anything last things for Jeff before we let him go? David, Scott, air in this episode
no,
so far.
No, it's very comprehensive.
Okay.
Pizza's better than burritos.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
So bad.
I can't even get to it.
So
you can
bad.
Roll a pizza into a burrito if you really want to have a wrap.
Put some rice in it, even if you want. Who gives a shit?
If you've ever seen the Taco Town sketch, they actually wrap a pizza around a burrito, and then there's a Parisian crepe that goes outside, and then a tote bag filled with vegetarian chili. Have you ever seen Taco Town
sketch? What are you talking about?
You don't know Taco Town? Yeah. No one knows Taco Town. Someone's going to know Taco Town, and they're going to say in the comments, they know what I'm talking about. They won't. No one will say. And you just hung me out to dry.
Jeff, go make dinner, man. We are so thankful for your time. We're going to cut to break. We'll come back with just the three of us, but it's been a real pleasure having you, man.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I'm going to go make myself a pizza burrito.
Yeah, Taco Town.
I was a lover.
We're back, and we are so thankful to Jeff Sullivan for his time, and, you know, knowing a lot about baseball and not cursing us out for ruining the thing that he built. We are going to start with what we should have started the original show with, which is what we are consuming as far as alcohol is concerned. David, what are you consuming?
So while we were talking to Jeff, I was actually working on, and I only go back in time because I want to give this brewery a shout out, but I actually was drinking two different beers from Lewis and Clark Brewing Company out of Helena, Montana.
One from Lewis, one from Clark, combined.
Meriwether Lewis and William Clark both make an excellent brew. Of course, Meriwether Lewis prefers his prickly pear pale ale, and William Clark with the tumbleweed IPA, both delicious, both in stores.
No, they're not. I've never seen them anywhere.
I know. You can only get them there.
What, in prickly pear?
In prickly pear, Helena, Montana.
No,
but currently I kind of sold out and went with the commercials, and I'm drinking a Lava Man Red Ale from Kona.
Oh, you know, that brewery is actually pretty fun to go visit.
They make great beer.
I like Kona. Kona's good.
In person, they're really fun.
It's Hawaii, of course.
Yeah,
it's fun.
I was going to say mostly because you're in Hawaii.
I hate
this
beer.
Place. Is excellent because I'm on a beach and it's 77 degrees.
Oh, what a shitty place to drink beer.
Let me tell you, you can have too much of a beer on a beach and it can start to not taste good. From my Thailand experience, you can only have so many tigers and then you're just like, fuck me. Get me something that's not a rice lager.
Hmm. Are you drinking a rice lager right now, Scott?
I'm not. I'm drinking from Aslan Brewing Company. It is a Batch 15 India Pale Ale. And despite my biases towards not liking IPAs in a can, it is a solid 7 out of 10.
Aslan Brewing Company. Is that?
Bellingham, Washington.
It is that one. Aslan.
Okay. So as I will.
So would you say that beer is Aslan. Safe?
Yes, sure. Okay. It's a safe beer. That beer restaurant place that they have there, Aslan Brew Pub, let's call it a brew pub, their food is incredible.
Okay.
Hey, if you're in Bellingham, go get a rice bowl.
No,
Aslan. Oh my god,
man, I love that rec because everybody sells, like, the name everybody drops when you go up to Bellingham is Boundary Bay, and I just don't think it's all that good. So
no, it's Ooh. not. I mean, I like Boundary Bay's beer, like,
yeah,
Scotch,
it's fine.
That's the gateway beer. IPA is great, but
it's a legacy beer too, like, it's foundational to
Aslan's beer. I would say is improving. The first time I had Aslan, I thought it was not good.
Okay.
And it's continued to get better and better. Batch 15 is not my favorite. I don't know that I'll get it again, but it's certainly solid. But the beers that I had there on tap were excellent. So
did you get the beer, this canned beer, in Bellingham, or is this available in the Seattle Metro for those that are interested?
It is. I got it at a PCC in the greater Seattle area.
Okay. There's only a greater Seattle area. It's greater and greater. When we were talking to Jeff, was drinking a Big Juicy IPA from No Lie Brew House out of Spokane, which is a brewery that I've had a hit and miss relationship with over time. But this is one of my favorite beers that they make, and really enjoyed that. I've since switched to a local brand, one that I've drank on the podcast before. I'm drinking Silver City's Nice Day IPA, which you will know because it has a nice black matte can and a sunglasses emoji. Right then off the can.
That sounds sessionable. Is that a session?
It is.
That is a great beer.
A really good beer. Like,
boy, I had a bad session earlier today. No disrespect to Black Raven. I like them a lot.
Me too.
And I think that their Nothing But Flowers session IPA is delicious, but it was, I can't remember what it was. It started with red, and it was a session IPA, and it was not good.
You know how the youth are all about finding the summer jam? Like, what's the anthem of our summer as we go?
Oh, sure. Last season it was Cheerleader.
See, exactly. You know how David and his ilk are into the anthem of the summer?
As
I grow older and more miserable and never get to leave my house on my own accord, I find that I am coming up with beers to recognize the seasons. And for me, the beer of my summer is this Silver City Nice Day IPA. If you find it, it's just perfect for about the weather that we're having right now. It's not good for it's too heavy for Thailand weather. But for a Northwest summer, you can't do much better than a nice IPA.
Is it okay if I pimp a local brewery for a second?
Mm-hmm.
So Scott mentioned a rice lager, and I just wanted to say right now, No Boat Brewing Company has a Vietnamese style rice lager on at an amazing new bar in Capitol Hill called Foreign National. And it's a perfect summer beer, and it's a little hot this week, so I'd go check it out.
It's brand new, right?
Yeah. Everything about that's brand new. The beer's my premier beer into the market, and the bar's brand new too, and it's awesome.
You could be the first person to go in there and mistakenly order David's beer.
Don't be an idiot.
Is it spanking new, though? Is it like TRL spanking new?
Mm-hmm. It's actually Next spanking new.
Oh, and what's the restaurant that's really there that I went to?
Stateside.
That's right.
Yeah, Fantastic Foreign National restaurant. Is the bar of Stateside. Both amazing spots in Cap Hill if you haven't been.
Hold on. Let me just wipe myself with the 20s that Stateside gave us really quick here. We're on air.
Guys, we make so much. You should have seen the check that Hotel Luxury Linens cut us. Insane.
Man, vitamin water. Big time. We have another sponsor. We're probably going to end the show with that today. Let's talk for a second about some Twitter Q&A. David, do you have a quick moment to do some Twitter Q&A with us?
I sure
do. You guys came through as always, and every single one of you. I know we don't get to all of the questions, but we see them and we really appreciate them. We should do an episode sometime where we just do
Twitter Q&A.
An hour and a half of Twitter Q&A, just because you guys are so great. We'll probably do that once the Mariners have not made the playoffs, which should be soon.
Ooh.
Chone?
Rough take.
No.
John. Figgins.
No. Chode.
Ooh. David, what's our first question?
Our first question comes in from fan of the podcast and podcast favorite, Kyle Rancourt.
Fan of the podcast.
Somebody who makes that Twitter handle, you will get on the podcast.
Who you can find Kyle Rancourt at Kyle Rancourt. He asks us, current MLB player you hate the most, and he says his is Josh Donaldson.
Mm. That's just the question straight up, player that you hate the most?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm being worse easily, at this time. Go ahead.
Mine's easily Luis Valbuena.
Ooh, explain. I think we've talked about that a little bit.
We have talked about this before. I have no reason why, but I just viscerally hate Luis Valbuena.
Well, he drops bombs off the Mariners.
Exactly. He's horrible all the time, except for the three games he plays the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah. I think he's gotten actually fairly good this year, but I understand and respect
the sentiment. Well, now he's usurped by that the kid. You know, of course, the Astros have like 30 top 10 prospects somehow, and they brought up a third baseman. So
30 top 10 prospects.
Factually accurate.
Yes. Scott, do you have somebody that you viscerally hate?
I do, and it has to be Mariner killers, right? So for me, it's easily Coco Crisp.
Mm.
And this is a perceived Mariner killer because, like, in actuality, he has not been. But every time we play the A's and it's a critical moment, that guy's roping a ball into the gap.
Yep.
Off someone that he should have no business doing it against. I'm not
That's
a fan.
True.
And the little finger flutter, no thanks.
The Moose tried to take him out for you years ago. This could have all been avoided if he'd just done his job.
Oh, he would have finished the job.
Yeah, exactly. He's a bad hitman. Don't hire the Moose to kill anyone. Will not do a good job. Mine is actually a little bit off of the beaten path, and there's not really a good reason for it other than the fact that I'm a bitter, angry old man. And that's Carlos Gonzalez of the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah. Really?
Wow.
You know,
I don't get this one. I don't get it. Explain.
I'm not sure what it is.
We never see him.
I know. I really think he's like the last greatest example of the Coors effect. And I think that
it's not his fault.
It's not his fault, but I also don't think he's very good. And I think that he's got this rep.
What if he is good though? What if he gets straight and he ends up to be Matt Holliday?
Well, then you mean like with a giant head and getting hit in the nuts in the playoffs when he's trying to
leave Coors Field and still fucking awesome.
I know. I was just trying to call back to when Matt Holliday got hit in the balls when he was trying to catch a ball.
I appreciate it, but I'll have none of it. And I'll explain.
You know what's horrible is Matt Holliday did something we would all dream of doing, which is be a professional baseball player in the playoffs. And you just had to bring him down to that.
We could talk about Brad Lidge if you want.
Oh. How do you ruin a career with one swing?
I'm not even a Pujols fan, and that is still just one of my favorite moments because it's the closest thing that baseball has ever had to a Mortal Kombat fatality.
just straight through the rib cage, ripping it out. Just rip out the spinal cord.
Just the spinal column and everything. Just
snap it across your knee.
That's what that was. And it was still one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in baseball history. I don't know. I don't know why it bothers me with Cargo so much. I feel like he's overhyped.
I would actually toss in Eric Hosmer into that group, too. I can't see Eric Hosmer.
Or Moustakas.
Or Moustakas.
Yeah, I was talk about two completely overhyped guys.
Well, yeah. Did you see that? I mean, Eric Hosmer is going to get a $100 million contract from somebody. Welcome to,
why?
Welcome to 2016 baseball.
So am I.
I don't,
give it
don't.
To yourself, but then you're strangely not going to be able to fulfill the terms of the contract. It's going to be
What is the deal with Hosmer? The guy's James Loney. Like, he's literally James Loney.
Wow. That's a hot take right there. I'm going to have to look him up while we're talking about it.
So, okay. Coming in next is a question from Austin Miller, who you can find at A. Mills, the number 73.
Oh, yeah, I know Austin.
Is that Mills with a Z?
No, S. Okay. A. Mills. A. I Mills.
Just, I wanted to clarify. You have an enunciation problem, so.
Well, I have a lot of problems.
He asked, a lot of problems. Enunciation is one.
It didn't catch on.
99 problems.
I sent that one into Jay-Z. He didn't catch it as the hook.
It's actually number what 7 are on the 99 problems.
Enunciation. What are the chances that we'll see Diaz in the closer role before next season?
Before next season?
Yeah.
Low. I would say low. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't know if it should happen. What do you guys think?
I don't think it should happen either.
We talked about this on the first half. So he is, we didn't really try to pin Jeff down from his national perspective, but what is he? One of the four best relief pitchers in Major League Baseball right now? Like, something just, like he's that. In that, like, whatever I the top tier to, is, he's there.
Yeah. We've been talking, or I've been talking about how we're probably, you know, if he keeps his current performance, we're probably a month removed from, like a Edwin Diaz Rookie of the Year push.
If he keeps striking out like 18 batters per nine innings from here to the rest of the year, I could see the argument for it.
Here's the obvious thing for me. Steve Cishek is signed next year for what, $6-7 million?
Yeah.
And we've seen that the Mariners have loved to trade relievers, and there is always going to be a market for proven closers. Cishek's only 30. Right? He's only 30 years old.
And has
old.
Not been bad this year, even though he hasn't at all. Yep.
But if you take him out of that role, then you're automatically reducing his value from a traditional sense. You just are. So why take him out of it? Unless you're in one of these playoff pushes where you absolutely must have your best guy in the highest leverage situations. But really, I mean, we've talked about it before. It's more important to keep Diaz in that kind of floating role.
That should be your best guy.
Yeah. He's also been a relief pitcher for 2.5 months.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's the closer next year. Maybe he's the closer out of camp next year. But I think Cishek stays a whole year just so they can trade him in the offseason.
And get a bounty, hopefully.
Yeah.
I wonder who they trade him to. They should trade him to the Marlins.
Imagine if they had Rodney and Cishek.
I want every Mariner deal to work out like the Leonis Martin deal.
And Caps. Holy
From
smokes.
Here on out.
Yeah, Ozuna for Cishek. Who says no?
I don't know. Has Marcell Ozuna annoyed Marlins ownership that week?
True.
Man, I hate ownership so much.
Let's bring on our next guest. Jeffrey Loria, how are you?
Rich as fuck. Thank you.
Just kidding. It's Marlins
Miami's
man.
Great.
It's a Marlins man. He's next.
Love the Cubans.
What? Is Marlins man not Jeffrey Loria? I thought they were the same person.
It's the only different is the orange. That's it.
Austin Howard, who you can find at Austin L. Howard, which I'm going to guess is Austin Lorenzo
Lance.
Howard.
Oh, I was going to say Lance. Does anyone name their kid Lance anymore? I think it's kind of a dead name.
Well, I mean, look what Mr. Armstrong did to the name. It's like kind of naming your kid Goliath at this point.
So of it. But look at what Lance Bass did to the name.
True. Maybe it evens out.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a balancing factor for like Adolf. You're just not gonna go there, right?
No one's willing to dip their toes back in that.
You went there,
but I didn't name my kid that.
Didn't you?
Yet.
I'm not having any more kids. You two both have so many more opportunities ahead of you. I'm done.
Not me.
if the Lord is kind.
I mean, from a science perspective, Dave has many more opportunities than me, Justin.
I'm going to totally not edit that out.
Okay.
Oh my God, what is Austin's question?
He wonders, if you could pick one Mariner to secretly cut up jerseys, who's your pick?
So this is, wait, the player has to be cutting up the jerseys?
Like the Chris Sale saga.
No, I get that, but like, yeah. I want to, which one would be
I guess which Mariner is most likely to do that?
Well, you yeah, got we your Vino with never a Mariner. That. Man, I'm going dark this week.
Yeah, you are. What's wrong?
I don't know, man.
Just
running a Mariners blog.
I'm guessing Carlos Baggio tried to cut up some credit cards and
jeez. He still has the scissors.
I mean, I'm guessing he has the tools to make that happen pretty easily.
That's a great one. Who else?
If we're including former Mariners, of course.
You know, I could see
it would probably be Miley.
See, I was gonna.
I could see Wade being weird enough to do that.
So we're talking current Mariner.
Yeah, yeah. Or I am.
Okay. No, I could totally see Wade doing that. And then, like, somehow turn the, like, jerseys into mulch that he's going to try to attract.
Or I could just see Wade Miley turning the throwback jersey into a sleeveless throwback jersey.
Oh, I could totally see that, too.
Then he uses the used sleeves or some sort of biodiesel fuel for his, like, Bayou hovercraft jet boat.
I was going to say Justin Ackley.
Ooh.
I'm going to go past because I could just see it being the only thing that actually made him happy. And that, like, he's just in a blacked out room.
So he had to ruin them.
And he's just there hacking away at the jerseys. And he's got this, like, very Dexter half smile on his face while he's doing it.
Except here's what happens. They change plans and they don't wear the jerseys the next day. And it never comes to see the light of day.
It never matters. It just never matters.
That's the only reason he doesn't get... you know, indicted in the whole thing. Yeah, I'm going to go with Dustin Ackley. I think that he would have a really good time taking a knife to baseball clothes. They haven't treated him very well over the last 5 years.
Jeez. Dang.
Super dark.
Sorry. Maybe Jeff rubbed off on me.
Nah, stay on brand.
So SJW asks us who you can find at C-Town, the number 51. Are there any managerial traits that you miss about Lloyd McClendon?
Traits, again, we're with enunciation here, or traits. Yeah.
Number 7 on that list.
Trait.
I'm going to bump that up to number 6.
Traits.
Okay.
Traits. As so in like, qualities.
Oh, so
we
like.
We all have the same answer to this question.
Like trait.
I mean, the full umpire crew dismantling was pretty awesome.
Yes. I miss Lloyd's fire.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun.
Purely from an entertainment perspective.
And we thought Service maybe had it with that second game where he came out and just told Lloyd Bannister, hey, fuck you.
Yeah, told Jeff Bannister to go piss off.
Yeah.
No, I mean, has there been, like, I feel like it's really underrated, that Lloyd ejection where he went to every single umpire.
It was amazing. It was Mimo's first start. It was amazing.
Oh, good memory. And just, and that was the one where Zunino got ejected.
Yeah, Zunino too, right? Got ejected, and then Lloyd came out and got tossed.
He went to every, and he walked to them. Like, it wasn't like they were all in a group, and he just, like, turned around in a circle.
No, they were all at their positions around the diamond.
Oh, God.
He's like, you, I'm coming to you. Stay there. I'm coming to you.
Just hold your spot.
I mean, that's the main thing that we miss, right? Like, there's something, Lloyd was not a good manager. We all agree with that, right?
Yeah. I don't think he was bad. I think that
I didn't say he was
we have
bad.
Had much worse managers. Yes. Like, for example, I think Wakamatsu was a way worse manager than Lloyd McClendon ever was.
I'm not saying that Lloyd's bad. I'm saying that Lloyd was not actively adding to his team's ability to win games.
I guess. There's so much about being a manager that is impossible.
I don't know.
Great. I can't even.
The only one I really can say, in my opinion, sucked was Eric Wedge.
Yeah. That's from your perspective as somebody who's played athletics at a fair.
Yeah, level. I would hate playing for Eric Wedge.
Why?
There's a certain type of coach who you can just tell in the back of their mind is like, I could be doing this better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, dude, you're 57.
And I did when I had a 580 OPS in the majors. Yeah. Over 7 scattered years.
So it's And that just, it rubs you wrong over the course of time. And then Eric just kind of had that little twitch in his eyes where he just knew he was always pissed off. And it was probably mostly at himself.
Yeah, because he was a failure.
But he just took it out on everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair enough.
Didn't do it for me.
I think that there's something to Lloyd. I don't know how to quantify this. And LL is such a forward-looking and forward-thinking place where we want to quantify and measure and statistically analyze everything. But, you know, I feel like if we've learned anything from the 2016 Chicago White Sox, it's that baseball players are weird as shit. And we don't really get the way that clubhouse.
Chris Sale has come off as such a weirdo.
Well, and the whole team. Like, how have they had time to play baseball this year? Between not tipping clubbies, stabbing jerseys in half, you know,
loving
like getting
children as their mascot.
Yeah, getting adolescent kids kicked out of the clubhouse and then being super upset about it. Like, it's been none of that makes sense. We can't relate to any of that in our normal work environment. And so when you have someone like Lloyd McClendon, who everybody, the term, it's a cliche and everybody uses it over and over again of he's a good baseball guy, like, that actually might be a thing that we don't really get. Like, you have to be able to speak the language of the people that you're in there. Like, how the fuck are you supposed to know what baseball players want? They're taking knives to jerseys.
There's a certain level of insanity that's involved with playing 162 games with essentially the same 25 guys.
Yeah.
And to steer that ship takes a mentality.
I think it just takes a familiarity, too. And I think that's what Lloyd had. And I think that more often than not, his players had his back because he had theirs, if that makes any sense.
Well, you saw that in Robbie's comments in the offseason that he felt almost personally responsible for Lloyd getting fired.
Well, he was the worst number three
second
hitter.
Baseman in the world.
Yeah, that's factually accurate.
That's fact. Anything actually any person of authority says is always fact.
It's true. Never question authority, kids.
Never.
Nope. Your teachers
don't listen to Pennywise records. Poison.
John Subert, who you can find.
Excellent transition, David. You're doing very well.
At Sub, S-E-U, B as in boy, Joe, J-O-H.
This is very confusing.
He has a weird ass handle. It's essentially he smashed his keyboard and that ended up being his handle.
Okay.
If Adam Lind drives a white bug, what does Wade Miley drive?
Oh, I already wasted this. Damn it. He drives one of those hovercraft bayou boats.
And by a hovercraft, you mean a fan boat.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Those.
So in Seattle, that means...
I don't live in the Florida Keys. I don't know what
it is. In Seattle, that means a duck, right?
Yeah.
That's what Wade Miley drives.
Wade Miley's so he is so a duck tour guide.
Couldn't you see him doing that?
Oh,
and like
my
even
God,
though, like he has no idea what's in Seattle, like he's just making stuff up.
Exactly.
Like, over here, Captain
So-and-so. This is actually Kramer giving the real Kramer tour in Seinfeld.
That is absolutely Wade Miley. Come aboard Miley's magical mystery tour.
You get a bite-sized Snickers at the end.
It's exactly like the, what is it, the Jungle Cruise at Disneyland?
Yeah.
Have you guys been on that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where it can either be really awful or really great, because the ride itself is terrible. But if you have the right tour guide.
It's on the guide.
Who's just going to just make shit up, then it'd be fine. And I bet Wade...
You gotta get the one who doesn't give a fuck.
Yep. Do you think that Wade Miley gives a fuck?
No. Zero.
No.
Fucks.
Literally nothing. About anything.
including,
not a single one.
Including getting outs.
He doesn't care about baseball.
Oh, that's mean. Wade, I actually am quite fond of you, despite your mediocre pitching this year, and I would like for you to stay. What was the question? What does Wade Miley drive? You know,
I could see Wade Miley driving an H3.
Tiny
like the worst
one?
Hummer ever.
The tiny one?
Before the one that bankrupt Hummer.
One that was like,
he's an H1 guy. He's
I agree.
H1 guy all the way. He's not driving an H3.
No, but Wade Miley, I feel like, likes to put on airs. So he'd like be like, I need to get a city car.
He's getting the original Humvee.
And that's the city car is an H3.
An H3, exactly.
I didn't get the...
My neighbor has an H3.
I got the Explorer, not the Expedition, you guys, because I wanted to save gas.
I got the Eddie Bauer edition.
It has flex fuel. What does that even mean?
I'll show you some flex. These nuts.
Actually, put him on your toe hitch.
And this is the entire monologue of Wade Miley leading a duck tour.
Do you guys like, I mean, not his pitching. I'm quite fond of Wade Miley as a human.
Oh, I mean, he supposedly has the clubhouse. He's like one of the leaders, which is
at least
amazing.
Spring training, last we checked in. We should check back in with Shannon soon and see how that's going. But
why don't we just check back in with Wade? Let's get Wade.
Let's call up Wade.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Why is he a 1920s paper boy?
I do a bad Southern.
You really
that
do.
That sounded more extra, read all about it.
Exactly.
Extra, read all about it. Miley, you
wait, Miley goes to Marlins.
Goes to Marlins. Crawfish goes up.
Oh, my God.
All right.
Do we have anything else?
We have another good one.
Okay.
And we can tie this into the Miley talk. TJ Miller, who you can find at TTEEMIL, the number 24.
Before you read his question, let me say too, like one of the most popular GIFs on LL that I use is that Dinger's GIF that like crosses over with the, I think it's a predator animal or something that's photoshopped in a Mariner uniform with Safeco, and he's like holding up a torch. That is Travis. So that's the guy that made it. He deserves full credit for that. You may now continue.
And let me just say, I love you on Silicon Valley and fuck manity forever. Please proceed.
Okay.
He asks of us, Iwakuma, Paxton, Miley, Walker, and Carnes, form a band. Who plays which instrument?
Oh, boy.
Iwakuma.
All right, so there's no doubt. Let's get this out of the way. There's no doubt that Nathan Carnes, there's no doubt that Wade Miley is on anything less than, what does the guy from the Presidency of the United States play? He plays like a two-string bass. Yeah, Miley cuts off a string. He's playing one-string bass. That's it, just the one.
And the jug.
And
that's why he plays one, so he can jug
some in one sort hand. Of Homer's all-purpose bucket that he's sitting on from Home Depot, and he's just popping that.
So this
thing
is like a folk band, like a bluegrass.
Yeah. Well, if he's in it,
it seems like it might be a bluegrass band. I could see Iwakuma playing like, I could see him dropping a harmonica in a bluegrass band.
I could see that. I don't see a lead singer in that group.
That's the problem.
Who's doing vocals?
For me, Walker was the lead singer because it's not Pax.
No, Pax is playing drums.
Oh, for sure. He's in the back.
He's the cajon. He's sitting on a box, just kind of smacking it every now and then.
Is this good, you
I
guys?
I thought Paxton was playing the washing board.
Yeah, I can see that. I like my spoons.
Is it safe to assume that this band will have absolutely no real guitarists?
Maybe it's just an instrumental percussion bluegrass band with no
with Ty Walker playing a glockenspiel.
No, he's got the jug. No, that was Miley on the jug.
Yeah, how many jugs are in this band?
It's an all jug band.
They play in a third. A rotation.
Iwakuma's on steel drums in the back.
Oh my gosh, Miley would totally be the front man in like a faux Jamaican
band.
See,
that I could see if we were doing like, if we were doing Rasta. I could totally see
Wade Miley just singing Under the Sea for like 4 hours straight.
Putting a tie-dye headband on.
And kiss the girl.
A shirt that says Grateful Dead Tour 78 is super faded.
She wants you.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good with that. So we've got Pax doing the washboard. Miley.
We don't have anything for Nate Carnes.
We haven't.
Woodblock.
You know how the Mighty Mighty Bosstones has like the hype man? I say this as if it's common knowledge, but they literally have a guy in their band that doesn't do anything but just pump people up on stage. I could see Nate Carnes getting up for that. I think if you play enough washboard for him, he might get up for it.
Okay. Sure. He has no other role. He's not in the band.
The problem is this is a pretty unflappable group of people.
It is a pretty mellow group.
That's why the reggae vibe really works for them.
I can totally see it.
Question.
Normal rocks on 2 and 4, but we're too chill.
Can I swap out Nathan Carnes with Eric Burns for the hype man role?
Yes.
Am I allowed to do that?
Yes.
Burns gets one more time back on the squad.
Yeah.
He rides in on a bike.
Exactly. No, he's got to ride out on the bike.
He rides in and out.
All right. So it's a little hostile.
I like it. What's the name of the band?
Oof. That's
is it still a Jamaican cover band?
Uh-huh.
Oof. Jamaican Me Crazy is too straightforward.
Blob Gnarly?
Oh, my gosh. That's a good one.
I don't know. We'll have to think about that more.
Marles Barkley.
Marles Barkley.
Actually, I think they do. They'd probably name their band like Tequiles O'Neills.
And only play in the keys.
Yeah.
During spring break.
That's a haul, dude.
It's a long bridge.
Shout out Bloodline. Good show. Florida Keys.
I've never heard of it.
You don't know Bloodline? Oh,
it's no. Is that like Bloodborne, the game?
No, it's a Netflix show with Coach Taylor on it from Friday Night Lights.
Oh, and Coach?
It's in the Four Keys.
Oh, no. Yeah. Not Coach the show.
Kyle Chandler. No, not Craig T. Nelson. He's not on the show.
Okay.
Not that I know of. Well, I haven't seen season three.
Okay.
It's not out yet. He could be.
Good to know. David, was that about it for the Twitter Q&A?
That pretty much wraps us up.
Okay. I think
yeah. So if you didn't hear your question, know that Dave has deemed it not good enough.
That's
and not the fact that we said we should probably wrap it up.
It's my fault.
We should wrap it up. I got nothing else, man. We had Jeff Sullivan on here in the first half. We did Twitter Q&A. We'll be back next week. The podcast has been a little too positive recently, so we're going to bring Zach Sanders on next week to make everybody sad. And I think that's about it. The Mariners, we recorded this during the game on Wednesday, and the Mariners got blown out by the Pirates. So fortunately, they have finally an off day tomorrow, their first one in 2 days. And they have, what, 3 games? Are you guys excited for Sunday Night Baseball? Let's end with that.
Yes.
How do you guys feel about that?
That is awesome. The Cubs really just bolstered the bullpen, which is a little scary. But
we can't
what a cool
about
thing
that.
For
we'll
us to be able to
stupid.
See. Yeah.
I'm so stoked. I'm a little bummed that it's that Felix is pitching and it's his first time on Sunday Night Baseball and he's kind of a shadow of what he used to be. And that it's against such a great team that's probably going to kick our ass.
Oof.
Cuz they are really good. But it's so cool that it's happening. It's just so overdue. And man, I can't wait until they get to Safeco. Because that's just going to be we'll light that place up.
Well, and I guess that's something we didn't talk about at all is that this team, I mean, they just lost to the Pirates, but they're 3 games over and they're in the hunt right now for both the wild card and the AL West. So it's like, I mean, we could ask for more, but
we have
it's not a bad place
more.
To be in relative to Mariners' past.
Yeah, they're whelming. It's fine.
But Whelming used to be like 3 games under 500.
Oh, no, that was way above Whelming.
Yeah.
We've seen way worse. So, yeah, they're a fun team. We didn't really do a lot of analysis. We'll get into it a little bit more next week. This was kind of a special episode. And, you know, we'll see where they sit in a week. In a week, the trade deadline will be over. They may have acquired, Jay Bruce. They may have traded Wade Miley and forgiven up on their future. And ended duck boat tours. We'll just have to wait and see. But
no. Who's going to replace him in the band?
Who would replace him in the band?
It's probably Supre. Considering he only played a 1-string bass, I think we can find some people to play.
You know,
someone else,
thing is,
someone else knows.
You know who's like strangely competent in every instrument? Not great, but just good enough in every instrument is Seth Smith.
There you go.
Okay, he can do it all, but not great.
Yeah. Jack of all trades, master of none. That is Seth Smith. That is what you
unless,
have to do when you
unless you give him a left-handed guitar and then oh god.
Good news. I am
do
not
that.
I'm not right. I'm not left-handed. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week on Dome and Bedlam, and until then, Gobs and Go Biz.